The game of baseball has long been a dreamy path out of poverty for some countries in the Caribbean, but the path into poverty for many of those Caribbean nations began with the devastation of the European slave trade. 14 nations from a group known as CARICOM are asking the former colonial powers of Britain, France, and the Netherlands to pay reparations for damages they inflicted over centuries through slavery and racism. One of the voices hoping to have standing in a court of law somewhere in the world is Stacey Ann Chin, a Jamaican-American writer and activist who lived in Jamaica until she was 24 years old. Welcome, Stacey Ann.
Thank you very much for having me, John.
So how is the argument for compensation, for call it what you will, some recognition of the devastation in the CARICOM nations from the slave trade, how is that debate taking place in your country?
I think that there are a number of ways that people expect there to be some kind of compensation. I think that the damage remains national in those spaces. And, you know, if we reference the conversations around what happened in Germany with the Jewish community and how it is that people have compensated those descendants of the Jews who were either killed or tortured, you know, under the Hitler regime, I think that people don't necessarily give out checks or hand out money in that kind of way. But I do believe that there needs to be some acknowledgement. And I think that here is where the crux of the argument lies, in the fact that people need an apology, they need acknowledgement of what happened, and they need the acknowledgement of how it has affected them generation after generation after generation. And I don't think that the people in the Caribbean are necessarily asking for monies or checks or coins to be given over, but it is apparent that the vestiges of slavery remain with regard to education, with regard to its ability to produce, to be a thriving economic nation in the global economy. There needs to be something that levels the playing field globally.
How would you describe visually the vestiges of slavery in Jamaica? How do they manifest themselves when you're driving through your town? What is it that you see that absolutely reminds you of the impact of the slave trade?
You know, it doesn't look very much different from what it looks like globally in terms of what slavery has done. The power hierarchy set up in most of those nations very much resemble the color hierarchy that was in place when slavery was in place. The lighter skinned you are, the more opportunity you have, the more power you have, the more opportunities you have to pursue your own happiness, your own passions, your own desires. Your children get to go off to, you know, college and high school. They get to own homes. The majority of the population, the poor population, tends to look not very different from the slave population in terms of phenotype. You know, the darker skinned people are still at the bottom of the economic ladder.
So what's your guess? Can the lawyers pull this off in some sense?
I think that it's something that has to happen. I'm not sure how it will happen, and I'm not sure if it will happen in my lifetime. But I know that these lawyers, these people, they have a valid a position from which to ask for such a thing, because things are owed to people when large organizations, be they governments or otherwise, take advantage of a nation. And when it goes on for 500 years, I do believe that some compensation is, it's a no-brainer that people should be given the opportunity at least to reap some of the benefits the labor of their ancestors provided for those who enjoy them now.
Stacey Ann Chin, Jamaican-American writer and activist who lived in Jamaica until she was 24 years old. Stacey Ann, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, John.
The argument by the lawyers is not quite a no-brainer. Lawyers representing the 14 Caribbean nations will have to prove more than just the proposition that slavery was and is abhorrent. The British government stipulates that already, but it adds in a statement, "We do not see reparations as the answer. Instead, we should concentrate on identifying ways forward with a focus on the shared global challenges that face our countries in the 21st century." Shared global challenges would seem to fall short of any monetary damages, at least from the British perspective. But attorney Martin Day says there may be a body of evidence to show the impact of slavery holding back Caribbean nations even today. Day is a senior partner at Lee Day, the British law firm litigating on behalf of the Caribbean countries.
Obviously, if this was a kind of minor issue, a property dispute between nations or whatever, 300, 400, 500 years would be miles too long to ever contemplate bringing such a claim. I think what one is really saying here is that the scale of the damage, the scale of the outrage that occurred during that 300 or 400 year period is so enormous that it can't just be pushed to one side, it can't just be pushed under the carpet. And it is an issue that obviously massively rankles still within the Caribbean.
What are the precedents here in international law in terms of, say, the Aboriginal population in Australia, the explicit sort of seeking of damages by groups from either the countries they're in or other countries?
Well, we've seen over the last 10, 15 years a whole series of cases around the world where groups of individuals who've been impacted, usually by very severe treatment. So, for example, we represented the Mau Mau, a group of Kenyans who were tortured by the British during the colonial era back in the 1940s and 50s. And we were able to successfully claim compensation for a group of about 5,000 of them. We succeeded in that just earlier this year. But there are other examples in the States. There was compensation paid to the Japanese who were interred during the course of the Second World War. There have been obviously large payouts in relation to what happened during the Holocaust era to the Jews by the German government and German industry. Usually these periods are like 50 or 60 years, so well beyond any sort of limitation period that in any of these countries. But also, I'm not suggesting that they are anything like as long as the 200, 300, 400 years that we're talking about with slavery.
And there's the question of illegality and the moving target of culture. I mean, I'm not saying that there is anything less than an absolute value of human life, regardless of race. But there certainly was a time in the world where people didn't view other people this way, and that some people had a little more standing than animals.
And that's obviously very fair in the sense of, it was a terrible chapter of history for many of the nations in terms of what was done at the time. But I think the crucial thing here is that we here in Britain, we built our Industrial Revolution on the back of much of what was going on within the slave trade. So although it was legal in a formal sense here in Britain, we were, as a country, were growing rich at the behest of all these millions of slaves taken from West Africa to the Caribbean. And you just have to go and talk to people, and it is still an issue that massively rankles and has had the most significant impact on them as a group, as a group of nations. You go to West Africa, you get exactly the same feeling. So I think it is our duty, moral, but I think also we have a good argument, legal, to say to the Caribbean, look, if you are still suffering as a result of what we did all those years ago, then there is a real duty on the British people, the British government, to try and resolve it.
What's the counterargument here? I mean, you could say that you're opening the door to lawsuits on the belated recognition of monotheism as a principle of humanity, or a belated recognition of vegetarianism as a principle of humanity. And certainly one could go to places in the world and see the horrible impacts of eating animal flesh all over the world and file lawsuits on that basis.
Well, I think that's slightly trivializing, if I may say, John, that here we're talking about millions of people who were treated like absolute dirt, and that the repercussions all these centuries later still remain. They've not gone away. And I think that for Britain, for France, for the Netherlands, for other Western European states, even the United States itself, that to try and just kind of push it to one side and say, well, look, life's just moved on, why don't you guys move on as well? Well, the reality is they haven't. And I think it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed now.
I agree with you that it needs to be addressed, but the argument in court will be exactly that. Look, we've moved on. It's time to move on here. What is the counter legal argument to say, no, you have to stop what you're doing and deal with this now, even beyond the significance of the humanitarian problems that you've described in those individual nations?
Well, I think what we would be trying to explain to the court, and I'm not saying for a single second that this is going to be the easiest legal case we've ever had to deal with, but Yeah, what we would be saying to the court is to explain to them the significance of what happened here today in 2013, and to explain to those judges in front of us how the importance of being able to move on for not just the Caribbean, but for the Western powers as well. And that legally, albeit that all these years have gone past, that they should use their discretion to enable these claims to be properly brought and to be properly resolved, in the same way that, as I say, in our Mau Mau case, the Kenyan case, the judge who's normally got 3 years in terms of the limitation period in the UK was prepared to exercise his discretion to say 50, 60 years was not too long.
Which is more important, the principle here or the actual dollar amount of reparations in the end?
I think both of them are very significant. I think there is a real importance in these sort of cases, and one sees it in the Caribbean, that they need to see victory, they need to see justice is being done and seem to be done. But at the same time, the money will be crucial as well, is that they are nations with living in a lot of poverty, and if they can manage to get some serious money out of the Western countries, then that would enable them to kind of move on as well in terms of their own economic and financial position. So I think it's a mixture of the two.
What is serious money in this case?
Too early to tell you. You know, quite genuinely, these are early days. We've got a lot of work to do as to working out quite what the claim to the Western powers should be. That's perhaps a discussion for another day.
Martin Day, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Martin Day is senior partner at Lee Day, the British law firm litigating on behalf of the Caribbean countries for reparations for the slave trade.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.